If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Blog Talk Radio.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-room-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the debut episode of The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. The voice you're hearing right now is Phoenix. Welcome, everyone. We're super excited to have this opportunity to share with you and my beautiful co-host,
Miss Elvira. Sorry, I'm still trying to remember who I am these days. This is Elvira, and I am just as excited, and this is really wonderful that we now are sitting here together having this show that we have so diligently worked towards for months.
Yeah, and months is no joke. It's been months that Elvira and I have been planning and scheming and talking, and so this is very exciting to see this thing come to birth and have a new beginning with this adventure.
Definitely, definitely.
So, with that in mind, we thought it would be important for us to talk about what we're going to talk about. What is this show? What does all of this mean? What are we doing here? So what is The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron? This is a radio show where we're going to talk about witchcraft, where we're going to talk about paganism, and we're going to talk about all of the subtext and subheadings and ideas on what all of those words mean. So tonight is going to be a little different than what our normal shows will be, because we're going to talk about us and who we are and why we do this crazy thing with being professional witches. And we're going to talk about the show. In future shows, you won't have us talking so much about Elvira and Phoenix, but more about the moon and the goddess and using ritual tools and creating rituals and doing the work of being a practicing witch and not so much the theory behind it, although we'll do that too. As you'll come to discover, Elvira and I both love to talk.
Is that true? That is true.
So.
Go for it.
Sure. So my name is Phoenix, and I have been practicing witchcraft since the age of 15. I am really close to turning 40. So it's been a few years that I've been doing this magic thing in my life. And at first, you know, I wasn't raised religious. So at some point in my teens, I really had a hunger for spirituality and a hunger for religion. And I dabbled and tasted and tried a lot of different things and stumbled upon goddess spirituality. and it just felt right. It was like, oh, there's a thing for what I've believed all along, and other people do this, and there's books, and there's community, and holy cow, there's this whole world out there. And I just kept going and going. And, you know, for a minute there, as a 15-year-old, my mom thought maybe I was in this very strange phase where I was collecting knives and tarot cards and candles. But the phase has lasted a really long time, and I'm initiated into a few different traditions. I teach about magical concepts. I've written a book about hoodoo altars. And this is really my life's work. The goddess found me at a young age, and I've followed the path where she's led. And today that leads me to being on a radio show. So that's me in a very short 30-second sum up. What about you, Elvira?
Well, this seems like a good time to say that we seem to share the same background, in that neither I did not have any particular religious upbringing. My father was very adamant, as my mother, that though they were raised in more structured religions, they wanted us to find our own, and I did. I went with different people to different services and all, but there was always an underlying knowingness that it is all one. And so it took, unfortunately, a divorce for me to actually plunge into my spirituality. And from there, it just blossomed. And I proceeded to open up to different structures of teachings. I am initiated in at least two other traditions that, you know, have a belief system and a structure in terms of witchcraft. And they're from hereditary witches. But at this point, I have traveled many roads and have gained a lot of knowledge, and feel that I am unique and yet one of many. So I tend to feel more comfortable with the openness of the goddess and, you know, the energy that it presents, rather than a particular structure. So I do have, and as Phoenix will attest, since she is here, we are both here in my home, I have tons of statues and stones and altars and affirmations and all the different accoutrements that go with it. Actually, one of my boyfriends said, you know, you should take some of these altars down. You might have more room for something else. And I looked at him horrified. So he obviously didn't last long. But that's where I am. It's like I see it, I breathe it, I eat it. And it's taken me a long time to get here, but I'm very happy that I am here. So that is my story.
There's been a little bit of playful conversation about which one of us is the witch and which one of us is the priestess. And I would say, my answer to that question is that we are both of those things. We are both a witch and we are both a priestess. And some days we may represent those titles differently. And I think that on many things, Elvira and I agree, but we also disagree frequently. And you'll come to see that as well as we talk about topics and different belief systems and goddesses. But the bottom line is the cauldron is Alan, who is our unsung hero in the background, our man in the shadows, who is running the board. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank him for his hard work. And he will be with us every week, but we probably won't hear very much from him because he's busy working. So thank you so much for being our cauldron, Alan.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
And so logistic-wise, you can listen to this show as a podcast. You can listen live on the website of Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen live by calling in and listening on your phone. And that number, I should know, that number is 657-383-0525. If you do go to blogtalkradio.com, there's a chat function where you can chat with the other people listening and you can chat with us. And right now, tonight's show, we're not taking in any calls or doing readings for the show, but that is something we're going to be doing in the future. So stay tuned, and if you follow us on Facebook or you check out our website, we're going to announce the shows that are coming up, and if there's an opportunity for you to call in and get a free reading or call in and get spell work advice or whatever. Because those are also things that Elvira and I do as our profession. We are readers and root workers and give spell advice. So, Elvira, before we got on the call today, we were talking about the labels of neo-pagan, pagan, witch, polytheist, Wiccan, and all of these labels. And I said to you, what do you label yourself? Would you mind answering that question again?
Oh, heck no. I label myself as a witch, definitely, you know, in that, again, in that capacity, taking on the role of priestess when necessary to do rituals. But if asked in the real world, I tend to, first of all, determine where I am standing. I visit my family. Some of my family have moved to Arkansas, and so I don't spend a lot of time telling everybody I'm a witch there. I have learned the art of silence, but I also look at who I'm talking to and determine their ability to understand what that word entails, not what it is given PR about or, you know, including the movies that have given us the incredible things that make our work sometimes very intriguing and interesting when we deal with our own clients.
Yeah.
So what would you label yourself at this point?
You know, it's interesting because my intensity about my feelings on this label, I'm using my air quotes right now, has changed a lot over time. My work life too, and you know, in the overculture, in the mundane world, I've worked for corporations where it was really uncomfortable to say I was pagan or a witch, and that I wasn't quite sure how that would be reflected back. And so I would use the title of Wiccan because that felt safer or easier. And it's a term, especially, you know, Elvira and I, we live in Northern California. We live in a pretty easygoing, progressive area where you can say, oh, I'm a Wiccan, and most people actually know what that means, which not true everywhere in the world, but, you know, we're pretty lucky here in this area. But Over time I've evolved, and I evolved into taking on the title of pagan because I felt like what I was doing wasn't traditional Wicca. It was more pagan. It was more eclectic. I was, you know, taking bits from different streams and strands and finding my own way. And I don't even think pagan fits anymore. I feel like witch is who I am and how I identify. You know, paganism as a community has gotten really interesting, almost contentious in how people define these titles and what they mean. And so I feel like it's almost easier to just say I'm a witch. You know, I love the goddess. I love nature. I practice witchcraft. I do spell work. You know, and witch just fits all of those things.
Yes, and I understand that we both come with the understanding of where to use this word and where not. I think that's part of our own understanding of who will appreciate it and what will we have to do if they don't. But when you become a witch, I think when you actually feel that you are that, I think that's when it's a powerful transition. I think you make a, you know, because pagan, I know, you were saying that and I was going, yes, I understand that because I will say that in certain instances when I know it will be less inflammatory, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in certain parts of the world, in the certain parts of the United States even, that word still rankles people. You know, people react and have strong feelings about what that is and what it is to identify as that. And I'm so blessed that that's not ever been my experience, but, you know, I want to honor that that is people's experience in certain parts of the world and that you do have to be careful of what you say and who you say it to, you know?
So then you did the joys of the internet. You did went on and you found what pagan means in terms of its etymology and all. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, and I knew this, but I needed the Google interwebs to confirm it for me, that pagan in its origins is Latin, and it comes from paganus, which meant someone who dwelled in the country. So, you know, we've taken pagan in a modern way and made it this thing that means someone who isn't under the Christian umbrella of faith. But if that's not what that word originally meant, and I think that's why some people refer to paganism as neo-paganism, because it's the new version of what was pre-Christianity, because we don't really know what they were doing before the written word. We don't really know what people were practicing before Christianity. We have ideas and we can paste things together and, you know, there's some information out there, but it's not like it's completely unbroken. There may have been lines that went underground and stayed hidden, but there is a resurfacing of this, of people looking for magic and connection to the elements and connection to the land. And so that's why some folks use that term neo-pagan. But ultimately, I think, you know, you got to decide what titles work for you and who you are and how you want to be in the world and just find your peace with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for the sake of, you know, definitions, and I know that the couple of interviews that I have had on other LMC radio shows, you know, it's like, well, what is the difference between neo-pagan and pagan? And here comes the big thing about, well, especially in the United States, we have a broken lineage, so to speak, European mm-hmm. and the other areas in terms of the Mediterranean have more of a non-broken, unbroken lineage. But as you said, they had to go underground. It had to disappear to survive to the, you know, mm-hmm. for the outside populace, because like many things, when other individuals come to power or structures come to power and you are not part of it, you have to find a way to survive.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And if you look at Wicca, you know, really a lot of modern paganism, you can trace origins back to Wicca, and Wicca made the resurgence of magical belief, but it wasn't reborn in the United States. It clearly comes from the UK, and there is a lineage there that goes back to the UK. We can't know with all certainty that the lineage is much older than the late 1800s when there was a revival of occult practices. You know, this gets into a very interesting debate, and there's lots of people who have lots of strong feelings about it. But, you know, Wicca is the roots of the modern pagan movement. It really is. And mm-hmm. I know some people will really not like me saying that, but a lot of what we practice now is because of Wicca and that practice being brought to the United States, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, my opinion, there is a fairy tradition elder who has passed on, but he would say that black magic is anything that works. And my feeling, like I've sort of taken that saying and expanded it, and, you know, your spirituality is whatever works for you, you know, and that it's not right, it's not wrong, it's yours, and no one else can really try and fit you into a box if you don't want to be in that box.
That's true. And I guess for the sake of what we are going to be doing here is we will be exploring the roots that we can find that are above ground and the roots that we have to go underground for to try mm-hmm. and bring forth information to the people that we are talking to and to the world, so that it's with our focus, obviously, and our lens, but it's also we are the goddess, and we are working with the goddess, and it is, you know, the aspects of the feminine. But it is not exclusive only mm-hmm. to feminine. It also has the masculine and the god aspect. But I think our show should show more of what it is to have the clearer picture of the goddesses that we talk about, and then how we integrate that in our lives. So, you know, we will definitely be doing, you know, ritual suggestions and, you know, correspondences and things that we can work with in terms of whatever deity we're talking about.
And a lot of the work that I do is in bringing the goddess into people's lives. And when I say the goddess, I mean the many variations of goddesses that exist out in the cosmos. You know, I'm not, my personal practice is not one of archetypes. I'm not talking about this one benevolent goddess figure, but more from a polytheist perspective, that there are lots of goddesses out there, and they do lots of different things, and we can connect with them in lots of different ways. And so that's part of the work that I bring to this show is when we talk about goddesses, like we will tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about Athena. But it's introducing you to those energies and getting to know them and meet them and see, is this a relationship that I want to develop? Is this a spirit that's going to help me on my journey? And sometimes yes and sometimes no. Not all goddesses are going to like you and vice versa. It's kind of like cats, you know. Sometimes you vibe and they'll let you pet them, and other times they'll scratch you and you have to, it's time to go away and leave them alone.
Right. And I do know for a fact that at some point when we have gotten a little bit more accustomed to how our show flows, we're going to want to bring on a guest to maybe showcase a particular spirituality of a goddess that is more prominent to that particular spirituality, be it the Asian, the Mediterranean, the African-American, the different aspects, I think, will be benefited by their knowledge coming into this, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I was just struck me is it might be interesting to hear what traditions you practice and or have practiced in.
Well, when I started, it was more of a generic, I would say Tarot was my religion, so to speak, and it opened up many doors to me. I have done a more, well, the one hereditary witch that I studied with, she was much more of the hermetic esoteric structure. She had a more structured system that she worked with. The other one was more of an herbal fairy tradition, so I kind of balanced those out. And then my focus really through all of this was to see how energy moved and how you could move this energy in people's lives to help them or help have them help themselves as a focus. So I went headlong into, you know, energy work. So Reiki was a big one. And then I wound up finally settling in, not necessarily to the tradition of the religious or the spiritual aspects of the Hawaiian tradition, but the energy of the Hawaiian tradition's navigational work, which is, you know, they had different, just like shamans, they had different ones that were for herbs and for chants and for dance and for the navigation was to literally navigate the energy pathways to get them from one island to another. And that was translated into not just a body work, physical hands-on body work, but it was translated into how to move your energy in your life. And that fascinated me, and that was an unbroken, and that was where I gravitate. So my spirituality is I have a particular patron goddess that I have worked with for decades, but I also call on others. I feel that the Strega tradition in its own intensity has been part of my life, but also, you know, for me, it's what is it that's going to work? Do I use a pen? Do I use a pencil? You know, do I use a brush? I find that for me, it's the tools, and then from there, basically a necessity to go from there to what I can do. So my practice is ultimately very open. And yet I do structured rituals for clients and myself as well.
Do you mind saying who your patroness is? You mentioned you're devoted to a goddess.
Hecate.
I knew that, but I thought it might be interesting for folks who didn't know that to hear it. I'm actually sitting right now next to a Hecate altar over here that's quite impressive. If Elvira will let me, I might take a picture of it and put it on our Facebook page because it's really beautiful.
Please do. It definitely is all, it's there. She's there, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's a little, it's been a little bit different of a journey. I stumbled onto this stuff in the early 90s, and that was right before witchcraft kind of had a big mainstream blow-up with books and availability and movies like The Craft and Practical Magic came out a couple of years after I stumbled into witchcraft. And so that really made it accessible. And the internet was just becoming a thing back then. So I had access to a lot of information. And so a lot of my early learning came from books and anything I could get my hands on and just, you know, this ritual in this book for the full moon. And I would rope a couple of friends into it and we would do a little ritual in my friend's living room for the full moon. And then at about 17, I think, I went to my first public ritual, which was put on by the reclaiming tradition. And I had my mind completely blown away. I was like, oh my God, this is what the books are talking about. And I haven't experienced it yet because I don't know what I'm doing. And these people know what they're doing, and this is freaking amazing. And I was hooked. I went to public ritual pretty much as often as I could from that point forward. But when I was really young, I was super shy. I'm still shy, but I was way more shy. And I didn't feel comfortable reaching out and getting more involved in the public community. So I would just rope people in. I always found someone who was curious or interested or wanted to learn more. And so we would put together full moon gatherings and rituals, and it was very eclectic. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere I did a self initiation ritual that I found in some book somewhere. And then along the way, I stumbled into Druidry, and I was initiated into a Druid organization called the Avalon Druid Order. Actually, my partner, Gwion, is the one who discovered that organization, and we both got involved with it. And then shortly thereafter, I dove into the reclaiming community full force and took all the classes that they offer and started teaching and going to witch camps and all of those things. And then just recently, I've become initiated into the Gardnerian tradition, which is very different than anything I've experienced before. So I'm rather eclectic, I think, which is why witch works better for me now, I think, than pagan or Wiccan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting because both of us have come in different forms. I know that at one time there were two other women that I circled with intensely as a mini, that was our coven, and they were part of it, and you were talking about ritual, and it reminded me of the things that we would do. I mean, literally, my daughter at the time was probably 7, and this woman that had been part of our group had moved up to Oregon, and so we literally, another friend of the other woman in our group, we would pack the car, we'd finish work, we'd put my daughter in the back and literally drive up at night to be there for Samhain or to be there for a specific gathering that we were going to have to do that. And it reminded me of the number of times that process was what fed me during a bulk of my, you know, earlier explorations. So thank you for letting me relive that moment.
Having a circle or a coven or a group or however you want to phrase it, there's lots of different words, but when you regularly gather with a group of people and you create sacred space together and you share information with each other, and even if all you're doing is checking in and being witnessed by a group of people on a regular basis, that's really powerful work. And it sounds so simple and so basic, but, you know, there's something about the neo-pagan movement and witchcraft in this modern day that's really about being in community and connecting with people. And because of the internet, you can find community now. You know, if you're a solo practitioner in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma, that doesn't mean you're so isolated and alone. You have this capacity to be with other people who are like-minded. It's so amazing and beautiful. It really makes me excited about where our traditions are moving towards and how much more accessible it is for people who are searching and seeking. And, you know, the goddess, she's got wide arms. She can hold us all.
And that is true. That is true. I know for both of us, the journey that we speak of individually is a journey everyone that has gone into spirituality, and, you know, we'll narrow it down to the pagan and the Wiccan and the natural earth-based traditions. We find them when we are looking, and when we're not looking, mm-hmm. they come up and they tap on us, our shoulder. And now it's a weaving. I love going to the environments that have this and seeing how they are growing and being a participant or a witness. And I really find strength in that for myself, because there is so much out there that can eat away at your sense of community and your sense of strength and you know, one little person. No, we're not. We're not just one little person. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
But I do know that our show, I mean, we're talking now about ourselves. We're talking about our beliefs, but that's important because we didn't have anything previous to let people know who we are, and, you know, except the people that have dealt with us either as clients or associates or, you know, friends. So this is kind of interesting. It's like, oh, hi, I'm this person. It's like to get meet and greet kind of a thing without shaking hands with everyone.
Yeah, and, you know, it's fun and interesting for me is I've known you for several years now, and even in this conversation, I'm learning things about you I didn't know.
Well, there's a part of me that I will tell a lot of things to clients at different times about things that happened to me, or so they can understand you are not alone. But mm-hmm. my belief systems and how I go to where I am now, I don't spend a whole lot of time, you know, striding it. You know, I guess that came from a family that, well, first of all, being the daughter of a therapist, you tend to try and hide the things so your dad doesn't go, hey, I know what's going on here. What are you talking about? You know, and be called on the carpet for something. So, but truthfully, it's fun. And I said before we started that this was going to be, you know, right now we're having a congenial conversation. We may wind up having a little bit of a difference of opinion or saying something to make a difference in how we look at the circumstances. But our spirituality is strong, and we see that in each other, and I think that's what we're trying to move forward with in terms of presenting information and our own enthusiasm about this thing we call witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So, and at this point, we might want to just do a couple of minutes to let people know that we are going to be, when we come back from our commercial break, that we are going to do a little bit of Athena so they can get a feel mm-hmm. of what our coming shows will be like.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to dig into Athena, talk a little bit about who she is and some of the affiliations and associations that are connected to her, tell a little bit about how she came into being. And I think Elvira and I have different opinions and thoughts about her as a goddess, so that'll be interesting as we dig into that. And then, because Athena is this goddess of wisdom, we have a ritual that we will offer about new beginnings and call, like, today, you know, this show, the new beginning for Elvira and I, so we thought we would run with that energy. But we're going to share a ritual with Athena as a guide for her wisdom, for when you have a new beginning in your life and how to approach that new beginning and get a clean, fresh start and move forward with that guardian of wisdom who's got your back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we'll dive right into the delicious Greek energy after our little break here.
Which should be starting in any moment, but if we are still keeping our conversation patter up, I am looking forward to seeing where we are at difference, because that excites me.
Yeah.
Really. We did have a little bit of a conversation beforehand to share our knowledge, and that was where we were. So our break time.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendala's Corner, starring Kendala Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Well,
I can't help but dance. I can't help but dance when I hear that little commercial break. I'm like doing a little dance over here.
I know. It's very bouncy. It keeps you. It definitely would be. You know, let's infuse a little energy here so we know we're there. So,
yeah.
Athena, my dear, Athena, goddess
yes.
of wisdom and strategy and all. Let me hear your take so I can kind of ruffle feathers on my end.
Well, Athena is the, you know, she's known as the goddess of wisdom. And I think I have to always give, like, cultural context when I talk about a goddess, because with the Greeks, we're so blessed with a plethora of information. Greek mythology is still taught in elementary school in the United States. You know, it's the one set of mythos that we've held on to. And it's probably because our culture and our government system is very much based on the Greek system. So, you know, we give them a little bit more credence than we do to other cultures. I don't know. That's just me going off on my own tangents there. But we have to understand, you know, the culture that she comes from, the stories that were written about her, the way that she was worshipped, we can't fully understand because we are looking at her story, and this is true with every goddess, we're looking at them with our modern lens. And so we can dig in and explore and learn, but it's always going to have our modern lens over it. So you have to keep that in mind, right? What's interesting for me about Athena is that she was not born of woman. Her birth was divine, and she actually came out of Zeus's head, right? There was a Zeus was one of the many women that Zeus was intimate with, ends up pregnant, and he finds out about it, and he's really freaking out because he knows that one of his offspring is going to be more powerful than him. So he swallows this woman before she can have a baby, but it's too late. The damage is done. The baby is there, and so by mystical and magical circumstances, many months later, Zeus has got a crazy bad headache. He's freaking out about how bad his head hurts. He's super upset about it, and so he calls upon Hephaestus, one of the healers, and he's like, you know, Zeus, I don't know what's going on here, but I think the only cure is for me to take my axe and crack your head open. And Zeus is like, okay, that sounds good. You know, you got to love the gods. And so he does, and Athena pops out. Right? She's born of man. That's super interesting and very unusual. And she's a ruler of war. You know, we have Mars, who's the god of war and all that, but she's strategy. She knows how to go in and make the plan for success, but it's not always jumping in there and chopping people up. It's the most peaceful way to find success. And she's fierce. but she's smart, you know? So there's something about her energy that's very different than other war goddesses or wisdom goddesses. She carries the war and the wisdom. She carries the strategy and the smarts. And I just think that's very different than the goddesses you see in other cultures that have similar energies. Does that make sense?
Huh? Okay, so that is good. And I think that based on that, I will start kind of with the goddess coming out of the god's head. I agree.
Yeah.
The mythology is there, but it represents a far older situation. From at least my perspective, it's the matriarchal goddess being, you know, swallowed by the patriarchal situation that was taking over all of the different areas, but she stayed powerful. She stayed powerful and gave him indigestion, which I thought was great. Does that tell you that we can give indigestion to patriarchy? And I see that, you know, yes, birthed from his head. She got the best of both worlds. I mean, she is both the strategist and the protectress. She, you know, takes care of, she's also of the art. So in wartime, she is the one with the cool head and the strategy. In peacetime, she protects and she works with the crafts. And I think that both those aspects are important. And I always, I mean, I even mentioned it, but I said this is a mediator. This is someone who would try to stop working on the war of bludgeoning people to death and work on a more harmonious solution where there is a, you know, a sense of compromise and putting things together. And I think that that process may date farther back, but now we have her in many ways. There is a harder version that they have presented, and I'd like to see a more mellowing of her as a war goddess as opposed to, you know, in that form. So what sayest thou for that?
I think that's really interesting because, you know, we're looking at these ancient energies, these ancient goddesses, these older than even written word, right? We know Athena from what the Greeks wrote about her, but there's lots of writing and speculating that she comes from a much older goddess who was just a bird goddess. You know, she's connected to owls. And there's some belief that there's an even ancienter, to use a really great word, an ancienter goddess who is a generic bird woman, right? And it, some folks believe that that's Athena. So we can look at that progression of her energy and how the Greeks needed someone who was a brilliant strategist, and Athena was born of that need. And now, as you know, to go back to that term neo-pagan, you know, modern pagan, modern witchcraft, what do we need Athena for? You know, I think personally, I don't want more war. You know, I think that it would be nice to switch the energy of our culture to not be violent. It would be really lovely to have a more peaceful world to be in. And I would like to call upon Athena's energy in that way and pull out more of that strategist as a peacemaker, more of that strategist as a someone who can work in the crafts and build and make and create things, to use that strategy to build and make and create a more peaceful way of being in the world. I think as humans, we figured out war. We figured it out. We've conquered that concept. We've got it. It's good. And now we can move on. It would be good.
I think that's a great thought and a great inspiration. And we need to go to the UN and we need to go do this. But there is something I did want to say, and which fascinated me when I started looking at some of the information, is that she also has the snake energy, which we already know because of the Gorgon, Medusa, and all of that. But that can date her back to the Minoan culture where the snake goddess was there. And the snake energy is another aspect of her. So that ties in, I think, somewhat me to her warlike aspects. But snakes were also protective. You know that they were more like cats in the ancient times in Greece. They were kept as more or less pets to take care of the rodents in the grain area. So in some ways, it's a powerful, but it's also a protective energy.
And I think, you know, the goddesses are complicated. We try, I want to take that word we back. I think in modern paganism, there is a tendency to say, oh, Athena is wisdom. Aphrodite is love. And we give them this title, this one energetic. But if you read their stories and their myths, if you look at how they were worked with anciently, they're very complicated. Athena
yeah.
does some really shitty things.
Yep.
She, you know, you mentioned Medusa. Her relationship with Medusa is not great. You know, Medusa, depending on the story you read, and that's the other thing to bear in mind, is there's so many versions of one tale, it's difficult to know what was the truth. And what's likely is all of these things are true. You know, we're saying that this is Greek, but Greek was hundreds of different villages when these stories were being birthed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Medusa she's attacked. She is the victim, and Athena punishes her for it. So, you know, she's not always this calm, cool, collected, energetic. I think that's important to know when working with her is she can get angry. She can
mm-hmm.
Get mad, and she can make decisions that aren't great because she makes mistakes, and that's why the goddesses and the gods are so valuable for us as humans, is that we can read their stories and learn their mistakes, and then maybe we don't make those same mistakes.
That's true, because you also bring up the Medusa, but there's also Ariadne, who, again, she gets turned into a spider because
right.
of the attitude that comes of Athena's anger. And so there is the darker side, as always, because we both have the light and the dark. And in general, one of the things that fascinated me was I found out we actually have a Parthenon with a very, very large statue of Aphrodite. I mean, not Aphrodite, sorry. Take that back. You said Aphrodite. And that was Athena in Nashville, Tennessee.
She wants to be here.
Huh?
Aphrodite wants to be here. That's why she keeps showing up.
Well, yeah, I think, and if I'm not mistaken, she's right behind you on another altar, too, by the way.
Oh, there we go.
But Athena actually has a very, very huge statue that they have built in a Parthenon, exactly replica of that in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, obviously, I'm impressed because it's in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's cool.
So one of these days I'll have to go visit it when I go visit my family in Arkansas, maybe take a side trip. But so I guess we need to talk about a ritual, because even with all this information, there is what do we do with it in the real
mm-hmm.
present time.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I want to say, you know, this ritual that we've created for this new beginning energy calls on Athena and her aspect of the holder of wisdom. So you can speak to her, invoke her, call her in, and ask for her guidance from her aspect of wise one, you know. If you have a deity, if you have a goddess, if you have a guardian spirit that you work with regularly, you can absolutely take this ritual and put in the deity of your choice or your specific patron or patroness, absolutely. But this was created and put together specifically with Athena and her wisdom energy in mind. So with that said, let's dive in. So this is a ritual for new beginnings. And I think what is important to keep in mind is with a new beginning, you need to also recognize that something is ending. And so it's important to take some time to totally clear out that old situation, that old energy, and give it a little brush down or whatever. So in this ritual, what we have put together is a bath. A bath to shift that old energy away and get you ready for the new thing you're stepping into. So what you'll need for this bath is a quartz crystal. Bigger is better, but it's not necessary. If you have a little sliver of a quartz crystal, that's okay. You'll want some Florida water, some Four Thieves vinegar, lemongrass essential oil, and sea salt. And you'll see from all these ingredients that this is a very eclectic ritual. There isn't any specific tradition being called on here. This is not a traditional Greek ritual, as you might have guessed from the Florida water. So you gather your ingredients and take that sea salt and rosemary oil and make a mix with it. And as you put in some drops of the, I'm sorry, not rosemary, the lemongrass, as you put in that lemongrass essential oil, focus on release. What is it you're releasing? And as you mix that, those drops of essential oil into the sea salt, focus on release and cleaning off the past and letting go of the past. And take all of those ingredients, go into your bathroom, put the quartz crystal in your bathtub, fill that bathtub with water as warm as you can handle it, hot as you can handle. You really want this to heat up your blood. Put in the Florida water, the Four Thieves vinegar, and a whole cup of Florida water. Like, make it substantial so you can really smell that cologne. Not so much as the vinegar. Just a teaspoon is enough. Put in your salt mix. And then speak an invocation to Athena. And allow this invocation to come from your heart. Great goddess Athena, I call upon your divine wisdom today to help me clear away this old situation. I call upon your divine wisdom today to help me bathe and release and let go of the old so I can step freely into the new. Let the words just come from your heart. Let it flow. When you're ready and you feel her energy, you may want to light a candle. You may not. But then get into the tub and soak. And soak for a while. Let that water get to a point where it's kind of chilly and you're done. You know, really soak. And stay in the bathtub and pull the drain. And watch all that water. Now, if you've used a little mini quartz crystal, you want to find it before you pull the drain. You don't want your quartz crystal to go floating away. So hold on to your crystal, but let that water go down and watch it. Watch the water flow down. There's something so simply powerful about watching dirty water be sucked away from you. Let all of that old energy go. Let it go down the drain. Let it go down the drain. And then take that quartz crystal. And there's debate here, I think, about whether you should literally dry yourself off with a towel or air dry. I'm going to let you as the ritualist decide what feels better. There is some superstition about if you towel dry off, you're wiping off what you've just done. But in this instance, we're releasing. So for me, I think toweling dry is great. But your mileage may vary. And I always encourage people to trust their instincts. So you're going to take that crystal and create an altar for Athena. What I recommend for her altar, and it doesn't need to be a big space, something small works. You just need a simple white candle, a small dish for olive oil, and an image of her. And you can print an image off of the Google webs. It's amazing what you can find on the internet. Find a beautiful picture of Athena, print it off, and place it on your altar with a white candle and a small dish. And then call upon her again. And when I say call upon her, I mean say these things out loud. Great goddess Athena, I call upon you today to help me in my new beginning. I call upon the energy of your wisdom to guide me in this new project, this new relationship, this new job, this new whatever it is you're stepping into. I call for your wisdom to guide me and help me make the best choices on this new path that I embark upon. Light the candle, give her an offering of olive oil, and put that quartz crystal in front of the image. And I would recommend doing this on a new moon where you have juicy, fresh, new energy, and let that soak all night long. So do this the night before your new beginning starts. And then when you leave your house in the morning, take that crystal with you, and you can keep it in your pocket. You can put it in your new office. You can take it with you on the date you're going on in your new relationship, whatever it is. But that crystal is now Athena's crystal. It's filled with her juicy wisdom, and you can take that with you to help tap into her energy as you step into your new situation. And, you know, a new situation can be so many things, so this can be used over and over again, anytime you step into a new situation and you know that you want a little extra guidance and wisdom as you move forward. All right, Elvira, I talked a lot. You want to add anything to that?
I was enthralled here. I'm like going, okay, all right, got it. Didn't have to take notes, but it was just like awesome. And it's interesting because I did ask when we were discussing about the ritual, about the Florida water and the eclectic point of reference that we were using. But because we started this whole show with the idea of describing the different aspects of what we see in the broad picture of an earth-based tradition that we, and religion and spirituality that we have, that it was good to start with something that takes in what is going on in our, you know, our United States with the traditions that we, she and I, have worked on in terms of hoodoo and all the different aspects. And I am looking at the next one, maybe more rigid in what we do, but this is, I think, a good very first beginning. I really enjoyed it, and I think it will be something that I'll try, and definitely I'll have to make sure it doesn't go down the drain, because truthfully, I don't have one of those little filter things in my tub, so it would definitely be down there, and I would like my new beginning not down there, but up here.
Yeah, absolutely. Word of caution, hold on to your quartz crystal, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And but as always, this is a good beginning, and it was, you know, in terms of what we've been experiencing and the energies that we're sharing and the discussion that we're having, we find out more about the situation of what we want to do in this show, and I see many different avenues that are going to start to open up for us. So I love the input that, you know, we've been seeing with the different people. Papa Newt is avidly putting in URLs for
Papa Newt's awesome.
I know, and we've got Alan running here totally and completely doing his thing too. I think that it's been an incredible thank you to him for this and for participating.
So much.
And obviously, Alan does come with his own information. He and another gentleman, David Newbull, are the people who put on the Mystic Fair, the Santa Rosa Mystic Fair here in Santa Rosa, which we participate in, you and I, in different forms as readers and individuals that come. It will be happening in October of this year, as it has in three other years before, with incredible chance. We'll talk more about that and we get further on in our shows.
Yeah. And a big thank you to Ms. Kat and Nagashiva and Charles Porterfield for helping make the radio show possible, and to Gwion for doing our announcements, and to Ms. Elvira for being awesome.
and next, to Phoenix for being awesome
about,
too. I mean, we've got a great awesome crowd here.
Thank you. And next week we're going to talk about full moons and the juiciness of full moons and why witches like them and why we are dance naked under them.
Well, I'd have to say my group here at the Senior Park would have an interesting problem with that, but you never know, may liven them up a bit. So... And I thank everyone that has joined us and those that will be listening to this down the road and, you know, the archival aspects. Thank you for coming and seeing and talking with us in the chat room and all.
And I think on that note,
yes,
that's a wrap, right?
Like it should be.
Yeah,
we should be seeing our last of our little bits of pieces going by. But as always, you and I still could keep talking forever.
That's true.
So, but again, we will be back next week, 6 o'clock Pacific Coast time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you know, for our first show, we had very few technological glitches, so that's good. And now that we've got one show under our belt, it should just continue to get smoother and smoother.
And that's true. And then we can get more interaction between us, and we'll see how that works out. But I think everyone will agree that so far we haven't had any first fly.
Not yet. We'll save that for a show down the road.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show, or ideas for upcoming shows, can be sent to our website at witchpriestesscauldron.com. That's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.